Snowdrifts by In Dreams. Hermione can see across the narrow gap dividing their desks that they've received the same memos. Malfoy has two sheets of lavender parchment spread flat, each of them still creased by the folds that allow them to traverse the Ministry's many departments. A paperweight sits atop them, off-center, and she refrains from reaching across the space between them to straighten it. Jerking her gaze back to her own desk, she opens each of her memos in turn. The first claims their elderly office head, Silas Canterbury, the only person other than the two of them that works in the Centaur Liaison Office, has taken an extended holiday leave and won't be back until the new year. Secondly, they are free to decorate their workplace. Hermione frowns at the memos as she sets them aside, feeling Malfoy stare on her. It's still more than a week until Christmas, and she doesn't care for the thought of spending every day with only Draco Malfoy for company.
"Decorating," he says with a low scoff. "Waste of a memo, honestly."
Hermione purses her lips but doesn't respond, allowing the silence to stagnate. At the heart of the matter, Hermione simply needs to tough it out. Malfoy has no genuine interest in centaurs, nor has he ever expressed any great concern for magical beings of any sort, and it's only a matter of time before Silas decides to retire. A couple of years at the most, though the rumor mill suggests it may be sooner. It's a quiet, sleepy closet of an office, and she can count on one hand the number of times a centaur has actually sought out their assistance, solitary beings as they are. But it's an opportunity, a chance to prove herself to the wider department, to show that she deserves more responsibility. The unfortunate other side of the coin is that she knows Malfoy only sticks around the office because he anticipates he'll be the one to take Silas's place. It might be preposterous, if not for the fact that it's possible. Both of them rarely have any proper work to do, leaving them very much on an even keel. With Silas gone for nearly 3 weeks, the office will be even quieter than usual. The thought is laughable, really. The following day, she arrives with a few small decorations. An ornament of a Muggle car with a Christmas tree tied to its roof. A stocking to hang over her desk. A bright orange Crookshanks embroidered onto the front in crooked lettering. A magical snow globe that plays a brief, tinkling song when she turns it over. Malfoy watches as she sets her ornaments out, both brows high on his forehead with disbelief or distaste. Sometimes she can't tell one expression from the next.
"What?"
she snaps, folding her arms. He shrugs, face falling blank.
"Nothing at all."
He spends the rest of the day staring at a half-written sheet of parchment, quill held aloft, an activity in which they both commonly engage to make themselves look busy. But he doesn't say anything about her taste in decor. She wonders at the cost to his willpower. The next morning, when Hermione slips through the narrow metal door into the Centaur Liaison office, she freezes. For a moment, she thinks she must have walked into the wrong room. Malfoy's workspace gleams with a gaudy abundance of silver and gold fairy lights, bouncing around brightly. She squints at him, lifting a hand to block some of the light, but he doesn't look up from his desk.
"Nice,"
she bites out, plastering on a smile she's certain reads false.
"Very festive."
The lights end sharply at the delineation between their desks, as though unable to cross an invisible boundary, and if she's honest, it makes her own space look dull and mediocre with her few small decorations.
"Thank you," Malfoy drawls.
His eyes are a little tight when he turns towards her, as though he can't quite see her.
"Silas didn't restrict how much we could decorate."
Hermione grits her teeth, rummaging through her desk drawer for an old pair of sunglasses. Malfoy smirks, turning back to a book on his desk. Upon closer inspection, she can see it's a book about Quidditch. Releasing a sigh, she reaches for parchment and a quill.
If he wants to play it this way, there isn't a chance she's backing down.
She arrives early the next day,
and by the time Malfoy walks into the office, an array of ornaments hang from the office's low ceiling. A large inflatable snowman blocks his chair, an elaborate metal reindeer covers half his desk, and it takes a fair bit of maneuvering for him to sit down. He simply offers her a baleful look, gray eyes dull when they land on her.
"Wow," Malfoy drawls, with obviously feigned enthusiasm. "Love what you've done with the place, Granger."
"Doesn't it look great?" she beams back. A muscle feathers in his jaw, one eye tightening only for a moment.
"Great," he repeats, delicately shifting the reindeer to hang precariously from one corner of his desk. "Fucking great."
She catches just a hint of something like frustration flit across his face, before he slips a pair of sunglasses on against the insistent brightness of his fairy lights. He rolls out his shoulders. Good. If he wants an office decorating Christmas ornament battle, he'll get one. A massive evergreen takes up the majority of the office the next day, both of their desks pushed together by the wall to make room for it. And it's so elaborately decorated, Hermione wonders how early he must have arrived, or if he even went home the night before. The situation is fully out of hand, and it takes several minutes for her to reach her desk, ducking low as she attempts to work while a massive bough jostles her head.
"Biggest tree I could find," Malfoy says next to her, his desk even closer than usual. "Isn't it a magnificent specimen?"
"It's fantastic," she manages, swatting a fairy light out of her face as it crosses the divide between their desks. "Really good work."
"Yeah," he says, nodding. "I thought you'd appreciate it."
She blows out a steadying breath. "It's only a shame Silas isn't here to see it." Hermione decides to make it snow. A light, festive sprinkling of snowflakes that infuses a crisp breeze onto the air. Nearly a week has passed since they received word that they could decorate the office, and that Silas wouldn't be back until the new year. Christmas is only a few days away, and despite the fact that she's been forced to spend most of her days in an uncomfortable silence with Draco Malfoy, she can't help but feel a bit of Christmas spirit. Donning her favorite knit jumper, she packs a set of mittens and a knit cap into her bag. Malfoy arrives after she's initiated the weather shift in the office's atmosphere, and she can see his jaw tighten before he wedges himself into his seat. With his massive tree taking up most of the room, their chairs are close enough that she could read his notes if she wanted to.
Not that she wants to.
Neither of them have had any proper work to do in days, and she doesn't care to know what he's been doing instead.
"Brisk in here," he comments partway through the morning, shooting her a glance that suggests he isn't particularly pleased.
His shoulders tighten a little as he returns to work, as though his gray button-down isn't warm enough. A few small skiffs of snow have begun to assemble on the floor, a small pile heaping up against the door.
"The spell is accurate to the weather outside," Hermione says. "We spend enough time cooped up down here. Perhaps you ought to have worn a coat."
"Obviously," Malfoy drawls. "I didn't know the office would be snowing."
Even so, the next day he arrives in a shirt and tie as usual. He casts the continuing snow a disdainful look before setting into his desk. Privately, Hermione wonders if he expected he would be able to override her weather charms, and when he doesn't say anything about the mounting snow, she suspects she's right. By lunchtime, a snowbank reaches a quarter of the way up the door, and it takes Hermione some effort to wrench it open in order to slip from the office and give her numb limbs a reprieve from the cold. When she returns, feeling the abrupt chill once more, she tugs her knit cap lower around her curls. The cold creeps into her bones as the afternoon slides past, and though a part of her regrets the snow, if she releases the spell, she'll only be handing Malfoy victory in this strange, unregulated game. He looks as irritable as she's ever seen him as he brushes a clump of snow from his pale hair. It lands on his parchment, soaking through, and he grits his teeth together.
"Would you let up with the snow?"
he asks, polite but clipped, as though he's attempting to control his tone.
"It's bloody cold in here. Whatever point you're trying to make, consider it acknowledged.
Although Hermione opens her mouth to reply, she hesitates. There's something in his expression she can't quite read, and a withering response dies on her tongue. She and Malfoy have never gotten along particularly well, and she wouldn't call them friends, but they've worked together for a few years now, and it's been a long time since the air between them was truly hostile. Maybe he's right. Maybe the game has gone a little too far. His brows flicker with surprise when she nods, contrite.
You're right. Perhaps we've overdone this a little.
They share a rueful glance, and Hermione doesn't immediately know what to make of it. A strange, unsettling sort of tension falls over the room, and in the wake of it, she looks away, discomfort creeping along her skin. Malfoy releases a sigh, raking a hand through his hair.
Yeah, okay. I think you're right.
It might be the first time he's ever conceded such a thing, and for a moment, she isn't sure whether she heard him correctly. When her gaze lingers on him, he shoots her a scowl and lifts his wand to begin dismantling some of his elaborate decorations. Nothing happens, and Malfoy lowers his wand, frowning. The snow continues to fall around them, a breeze carrying through the room. A chill pervades Hermione's knit jumper, a shiver shooting down her spine and into her extremities. Malfoy's face tightens with a grimace, and he casts the spell again, only for nothing to happen once more.
"Why is my magic stalled?" he drawls, cocking a brow.
He wraps his arms across his front when the air grows colder, matching the onslaught of a storm brewing outside on Whitehall. He swats away a flurry of snowflakes and adds,
"Call off your snowstorm, Granger."
Hermione rummages for her wand and casts the countercharm. When the snow only increases, they share a hesitant glance.
"It isn't working," she says,
another shudder racking her spine, and she can't quite bring herself to meet his gaze.
"That should be the spell."
Clenching his jaw, he tries another spell, then casts a simple knock on the small office's lighting. All of the lights remain on, including his obnoxious fairy lights.
"Fuck," Malfoy says softly.
He shoots her a resigned glance.
"I think someone's messed with the atmosphere."
Her stomach twists up in knots. She's heard of such a thing before, but never witnessed it firsthand, the way magic sometimes falters in the face of extreme atmospheric pressure. Still, she refuses to accept it, casting every iteration of a spell she can think of to quell the weather. Finally, she sags back into her seat, the bitter sting of defeat mingling with the cold. Malfoy rises from his seat, maneuvering through the thick snow towards the door, where it's piled up as a solid wall. He uncovers the handle and gives a great pull, but the door stays firmly sealed. The snow is dense and thick, enough to keep the door firmly shut. Doleful eyes slide to meet hers as he says,
"We're stuck."
A wave of irrational panic crashes down upon her, and Hermione's first thought is that they're going to freeze, that by the time anyone finds them, they'll be buried in her own snowstorm. To her combined surprise and relief, Malfoy doesn't rub it in, perhaps because he knows they're both responsible for the situation elevating out of control, or because it's by a pure weather-related fluke that they're unable to use magic.
"Surely we can dig our way out,"
she reasons, her gaze roving the small office for anything they might use as a makeshift shovel. There isn't anything, and when she attempts to send a memo, it collides with the snow and falls still. Malfoy settles atop of his desk, sweeping several decorations aside as he leans back against the wall. His eyelids flutter, and Hermione shifts to sit on her own desk next to him. It isn't as though either of them has any work to do, and it hardly feels right to pretend.
"The storm has to break eventually," he says softly. "And when it does, we'll be able to access our magic again. We only need to keep ourselves distracted until then."
Distracted. Hermione's scarcely been able to distract herself from his presence all week, and the months and years where they've been working in this small office together.
"Easier said than done," she says,
pulling her knitted cap down lower on her head.
"When it's ridiculously cold in here."
"Maybe, Don't bring a winter storm into the office next time, Malfoy clips. Your clothing is at least more weather-appropriate.
Hermione rummages for her thick mittens, pulling them on as she sinks back against the wall next to him. Their shoulders graze, shooting a jolt of warmth through her, and despite herself, she doesn't draw away.
We're just going to need to keep ourselves warm, he says, casting her a cautious glance. This storm could get worse before it gets better.
A prickle of irritation flares within her at the absurdity of the situation, and she releases a huff.
Maybe if you didn't need to be so competitive about everything, we wouldn't be in this situation.
Sure, he retorts, his arm brushing against hers. Blame me for your fucking spell.
I'm not blaming you for my spell, she snaps. But we both know that none of this would have happened.
It is absolutely like you to put this on me.
They both fall silent at once, realizing the truth of the situation at hand. Malfoy huffs, wrapping his arms tightly across his front, and in their closeness, she can sense he's shivering next to her. The air has grown significantly colder since they arrived that morning, and though Hermione's grateful for her knitted jumper, she still feels the chill, coupled with a twinge of discomfort.
"Do you want my mittens?"
she asks, tugging them from her hands with some effort.
"It isn't a lot, but..."
"No," he bites out through quaking teeth. "You'll freeze your hands."
"You're clearly already freezing."
She turns to face him, assessing the tightness in his countenance.
"If it gets much worse in here, we could both end up sick."
She doesn't need to add the rest. Or worse. For a long moment, he doesn't respond. And finally, he manages a terse,
"Don't hit me."
"Why would I..."
He shifts next to her, untangling his arms from across his chest, and wraps one around her shoulders, drawing her close. Hermione's eyes shoot wide with surprise, with the sudden fluttering that races through her at his proximity, but she can't deny his body heat is significantly warmer against her. She ends up with her face against his front, and they sit, tense and still, for several moments before she says,
"I suppose we're just going to have to do what we must."
A low snicker falls against her ear, and he drawls,
"I can only imagine this is torture for you."
If she's honest, it isn't. Malfoy's hold around her is unfamiliar, but in an anticipatory sort of way she wasn't expecting. Like she wants to become familiar with the sensation of it.
"It isn't torture," she confesses. "In fact, this is much preferable to freezing."
His arms tighten a little, shifting the two of them into a more comfortable position. Hermione settles back against him, curiosity sparking within her at the twist in her stomach. Carefully, and with no small amount of trepidation, she wraps her mitten-covered hands around his bare fingers. It's been a while since she's been so close to anyone, let alone Malfoy, and a part of her is surprised by the fact that he hasn't made a show of distaste over their closeness. A small voice in the back of her mind springs up. That he hasn't said anything rude to her in as long as she can remember. That just maybe she's being unnecessarily harsh in her judgments of him. His fingers tense through the fabric of her mittens before he relaxes again, a long breath sliding from his lungs and lifting her curls.
"Thanks, Granger."
Her hands are smaller than his, but the mittens are large enough that she can nearly cover his hands with her own. Hermione wonders if he can feel her heart racing.
"This snow was a really bad idea," she says softly as she gazes at the storm swirling through the room,
and it's the first true olive branch she can recall offering him. For as long as they've worked together, she's never made much of an effort. Now she wonders how many chances she overlooked.
"It was," he murmurs, the words low against her skin. "But we can call it a draw. That massive tree isn't much better."
A gentle smile tugs at her lips as she settles back against him, and she can't quite comprehend the fact that they've adjusted so she's between his legs. His hold tightens across her front, and she feels safer than she ever could have imagined in his arms. Despite the storm raging on, she feels surprisingly warm.
"You know, Granger," he says quietly. We could try to get along.
When he hesitates for a long moment, she realizes a breath is caught in her chest.
I don't know. Maybe I don't deserve it. But this doesn't make working together any easier.
Her cheeks sting with a sudden wash of shame, and she can't help the words that spill free.
We both want this office when Silas retires.
A quiet huff of laugh brushes her cheek.
Whatever made you think I want to take over this office? I can't imagine a worse place to spend my career.
What?
Still in his arms, she twists towards him, suddenly aware of their closeness when they come face to face. Rapidly, she turns away, focusing her gaze on his ridiculously large tree while she asks,
Then why are you still working here?
Malfoy doesn't answer for so long that she suspects he won't. That maybe the precarity of the situation has used up any goodwill that might have existed between them. When he does speak, it's so quiet she has to strain to hear him over the whistling of the wind.
I know you want it for the doors it will open in the ministry, he says. And I knew if I left, Silas would hire someone else in my place. Someone who would only want this job for the chance to take over.
The words don't make sense, and her lips pull into a frown.
Why should you care?
His arms shift.
I shouldn't.
Her cheeks grow warm again, and it has nothing to do with the cold, nor with the heat of his chest against her back. Her own words fall as a whisper.
You've stayed here as a placeholder.
We both know Silas will promote someone internally when he's ready to retire, and I'll be surprised if he sticks around another 6 months.
He falls silent again, then adds,
I already have another position lined up, so you don't need to worry about me getting in your way.
Her head spins, and her grip on his fingers tightens. The majority of her uncharitable sentiments about him have revolved around the thought that he's only stayed in the office for the chance to thwart something she wants when the time comes. To hear him express something else, something completely different, causes unease to twist within her.
If you have another job already, then...
She cuts herself off, uncertain what she means to ask and how to ask it.
It will be open for me when I'm ready.
In a matter of 20 minutes, he's managed to flip most of her beliefs about him on their head, and Hermione isn't certain what to make of that. Another surge of shame, stronger this time, swells within her.
I thought you were only sticking around because you wanted to make sure I didn't get to take over this office, she whispers.
I know.
But you don't even...
No.
She turns her head again, even though she can taste his minty breath on her own lips at their closeness, and searches his gray gaze. Despite the small room in which they work, they've never been half as close, and she's surprised by the flecks of silver in his eyes.
Why would you do that for me?
A knit forms between his brows, a gentle downwards tug on his mouth.
Because you've worked hard, and you genuinely care about magical creatures. You deserve it more than anyone, Granger.
It's the nicest thing he's ever said to her, by far, and she can't wrap her head around the conversation. The way everything she thought she knew about him is rapidly proving false.
Where is your new position? She asks,
a lukewarm effort to ignore the heat in her chest as she stares at him.
Transportation, he says quietly. I've been in talks with the department head for the better part of a year, ever since I started to suspect this would be Silas's last year.
A hint of humor tugs at his lips.
You can't imagine I enjoy sitting around here all day with nothing to do.
She offers a smile in return.
I don't either, but it's the best path into the Beings Division one day.
The smile drops off as she attempts to understand his reasoning for any of this.
You've put off your own plans to make sure I get the promotion?
His shoulders shift with a shrug, and he glances away.
If you want to put it that way, I suppose.
Why not tell me?
Another wry laugh.
You don't exactly like me.
It doesn't feel like enough.
Why?
She asks again, the word low and tinged with trepidation. A niggling sensation hovers about the edges of her conscience, and she can't quite place it. as though there's something she ought to understand. "Why stick around? You don't owe me anything." Malfoy sighs, his arms shifting around her front. She can't quite tell if he pulls her a little closer into him. His brow nudges the side of her head.
"Maybe I like seeing you every day. Like, it makes everything better."
His voice lowers to a breath, and he adds,
"Maybe I should have a different answer, but that's all I have."
A breath hitches in her chest at the admission.
"We rarely speak," she says, unable to find something more meaningful in the sudden chaos of her mind.
Her heart clamors in her chest, leaping into a rapid cadence, and she wonders if he can feel it.
"I know," he says. "Like I said, maybe I don't deserve it."
A slow creep of despair settles in her bones, embedding a chill one layer deeper than that from the winter storm. Hermione sags against his chest, unable to subdue the urge to say something more, something that she isn't certain whether she can offer. But she shifts her hands, bringing her wrists to the tip of his fingers. He follows her intent, sliding his hands into her knitted mittens. They're snug, but large enough, and his fingers are jarringly cold against her own as she entwines them together.
"Maybe," Hermione breathes. "I haven't given you a chance, even though I know you've changed."
The side of his head presses against hers again, and she can feel his cool breath on her collarbone.
"You don't need to do anything."
She might be tempted to listen to him, to let all of this slide. They can wait out the storm and chalk it up to something like temporary insanity. Confessions born of desperation through involuntary confinement and forced proximity. But for the way he's turned over everything she thought she believed about him, the way she feels in his arms, and how a part of her doesn't want him to ever let go. They fall into an almost peaceful silence, watching the snow accumulate on the boughs of the evergreen. She isn't certain, but the snowfall looks a little lighter. The chill in the air doesn't feel as harsh. Malfoy withdraws his hands from her mittens to tug at a loose curl peeking out from beneath her knit cap, and his fingers brush the line of her jaw. Heat sparks within her as she glances up at him, tilting her head to meet his eye. Adrenaline courses through her veins at what she finds there. Raw vulnerability, a hint of despair, and something else she can't quite name, something that speaks to the riot in her chest. She turns in his hold to face him, one of her knees resting between his legs. His grip shifts, but he doesn't let her go, as though if he releases her, this might all vanish. For all she knows, once the door opens, it will.
"Are you being truthful?" she asks, her own voice sounding low and feeble.
"Of course."
Hermione removes her mittens and reaches for him, brushing her fingertips along his cheekbone, the line of his jaw. Drawing in a deep breath, she brushes the pad of her thumb against his bottom lip, watching his throat shift with a swallow.
"Why not tell me sooner?"
She can't comprehend the racing of her heart, but no part of her wants to deny it. That maybe she's kept him at arm's length for this very reason, and now she can see the walls between them were made of sand. Wry deprecation curls his lips.
"It wouldn't have made a difference."
"Wouldn't it?"
she asks. When he doesn't look away, she wants to lose herself in the silvery depths of his eyes. She'll try, if he lets her.
"Come on," he says quietly. "There's no place in this world for you and me."
Even as he speaks the words, he doesn't look away, and she can almost catch a glimpse of the man he truly is on the other side of his guarded walls. In his words, she can hear the truth, or however it looks through his eyes. There's no offense in it, only a summation of the world in which they live. The past that divides them, and the present that would seek to keep them on careful sides of arbitrary lines. She drags her nails along the stubble lining his jaw. A heavy breath falls from his lips as his fingers curl around her hip.
"It doesn't matter,"
she says, holding his gaze.
what the world thinks.
A hint of warmth lifts the corner of his mouth as he drags her close, a glint in his eyes in the moments before his mouth finds hers. His lips are cool from the chill in the room, but heat flares in her veins at the contact, at the press of his kiss, the brush of his tongue, the feel of his cool hands on her cold cheeks. It's a juxtaposition of hot and cold, distant and close, of all the things she never realized she wanted, with the sudden, all-encompassing need she feels. Drawing her closer, their bodies flush, Malfoy kisses her harder, as though this moment is everything. As if this means more than she ever knew, and she's caught on the periphery of her own desires, looking in. She kisses him again, long and slow, her heart stuttering as his hands rove her sides and settle on her back. "We almost never get along. I thought you had no interest," he murmurs against her lips when they separate, heavy breaths mingling together. Sliding her fingers through his snow-damp hair, she says,
"Maybe I never let myself take a closer look."
"And now?" The vulnerability is plain on his face, raw and open, as though he wants the answer while fearing it all the same. His snowy blonde strands feel like silk between her fingers, a bright gleam in his eyes that she wants to explore.
"Now," she whispers, "I want to know all there is to know."
A slow grin crosses his face, and his gaze slides to the office around them, where the snowstorm has settled at last. A tingle in her veins alerts Hermione to the return of her magic, but now she doesn't want to leave.
"I'm going to hold you to that when we leave this office."
As he gazes at her, a glint in his eye, Hermione smiles.
"Please do."
The barriers between them have always felt a little insurmountable, like ice. But now she can see the thaw, the slow melt, and she longs to know what she'll find on the other side.